once they stop buying Bitcoin, then the whole thing implodes because Bitcoin's never been digital gold. It's just fool's gold. It's a decentralized Ponzi, and they need more people coming in. And if they're not getting more people to come in, then the people that are already in can't get out.
Is about more than just a regular gym routine. When was the last time you checked on your financial fitness? If you're feeling like you're falling behind, Ed Sedell is here to help with The Retirement Trainer, a podcast about helping you get into better financial shape. Every week, Ed talks about things you need to know to become more financially fit for your future. Learn about things like how much money will you need, financial mistakes other people often make, and how you can avoid them. Plus, details on The Retirement Fitness Plan, a plan Ed personally created to help you get to and through retirement by focusing on five key areas of your financial life. Learn more about The Retirement Fitness Plan when you visit egsifinancial.com and click on processes. Then subscribe, follow, and listen to The Retirement Trainer on Apple Podcasts, your iHeart app, or whichever podcast platform you prefer.
Peter, how are you? Hey, I really appreciate you doing this. I got to be honest with you. I'm a huge fan. I've been listening to you for years. Yeah, I've been excited about doing this for a long time. So thanks for coming on.
All right.
I know your time is limited. So really what I like to do is just kind of do an opening, do an introduction, kind of lay out the topics that we want to talk about and just kind of get into questions. How's that sound?
Oh, that's fine.
Okay. All right. So today we're going to go beyond the headlines to really uncover the future shaping the global economy and your financial future, especially as it relates to your retirement. Today, I'm honored and privileged to have someone who's never shied away from controversial predictions. He's an economist, an author, and the Euro-Pacific Capital founder, Mr. Peter Schiff. Peter, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invite.
Absolutely. Like I said, I'm a fan. I've been listening to you for a long time. We agree on an awful lot of things, and you've challenged me to come at the same conclusion from different angles. So it's good to hear your perspective, and I'm looking forward to hearing it today because you have been warning us for years, as I have, about the dangers of easy money, government debt, the illusion of prosperity built on borrowed money. And really, if it's all right with you, I'd like to explore the state of the U.S. dollar and what you see as America's economic illusion and why you believe gold is really the future money.
All right, sure.
So you've warned us the strength of the dollar is really an illusion. But what we've seen up until this year, the dollar index, the dollar's been really, really strong. But this year, we've started to see some cracks. So why was the dollar so strong until this year? And what's kind of giving the cracks in the U.S. dollar that we're starting to see?
Well, I think one of the reasons the dollar was strong is there was a lot of investment flows into the U.S. The U.S. stock market had done much better than global markets. And so I think a lot of capital was attracted into our markets. And of course, if you want to buy U.S. stocks, you need U.S. dollars. And also with the strength of the dollar, I think there was demand for U.S. bonds because with an appreciating currency, that meant that foreigners who bought U.S. bonds, had a gain on the foreign exchange. So kind of it was a self-feeding prophecy. Plus, you had the Fed hiking rates for a while, and that was also a positive for the dollar. So you had a few things that were combining to strengthen the dollar against other fiat currencies. But the whole time, the dollar was falling against gold. And so that means the dollar was actually weak. It's just that it was less weak than the euro or the pound or the yen because those currencies were falling even more than the dollar priced in gold. But I think what changed this year is the dollar peaked out against its fiat counterparts, and it's now down quite a bit on the year. At one point, it was down about 10%. It's bounced a bit since then, but it's still a very weak year, one of the weakest on record for the dollar. But I think the dollar is going to get a lot weaker against other fiat currencies. And you're going to see that probably later this year, last couple of months. And then I think quite a bit next year, I think we'll see a big decline in the dollar index. But I think the gold gain will continue, not just in terms of dollars, but in terms of all the currencies. So I think you're going to continue to see the euro and yen, pound, you know, losing value against gold. So the British and, you know, the Germans, they're going to need more euros or pounds to buy gold. But Americans are going to need even more dollars to buy gold, because I think the dollar will be even weaker than those currencies.
So what do you think is going to trigger that? I mean, we're already starting to see it. Do you think it's going to excel at a more rapid pace here in the next couple of years?
I mean, I think it's already been triggered. I think a lot of it had to do with Trump and the big, beautiful bill. I mean, that kind of burst any illusions or delusions that people might have had that Trump was going to be fiscally responsible and that Republican Congress was going to somehow reverse the excess spending of the Biden era. So that didn't happen. In fact, Trump budgets are going to be even bigger deficits than Biden. Then, of course, Trump is really beating the drum for lower interest rates and more inflation. He wants the Fed to slash rates. I'm sure he wants more quantitative easing. So that's not a good thing. The firing of Lisa Cook and, you know, the way Trump is handling the Fed is, I think, really causing the pretense of an independent Fed to be dropped. And so that's a negative for the dollar. The tariffs, I think, are also a negative. A lot of people expected tariffs to be good for the dollar. I didn't believe that. And so I always thought that when the dollar rallied, when it looked like Trump was going to win, that that was a opportunity to sell dollars, because I thought that the tariffs would be a net negative for the U.S. economy, that they would undermine the competitiveness of what manufacturing we have left. And I think that's what's going to happen. And I don't think the tax increases on the tariffs are enough to offset the other tax cuts or the spending increases in the big, beautiful bill. So they're not really going to result in smaller deficits. The deficits are going to be larger despite the tariffs. And of course, the tariffs are not paid by our trading partners. They're paid by Americans. And I think they undercut, you know, the reason that the world has been lending us so much money and propping up our currency. If the tariffs make it harder for Americans to afford to buy imported goods, then why are these countries subsidizing the economy by trying to, you know, buy dollars to prop up the dollar to make it easier for us to buy their goods, which I think was a mistake in the first place. But I think that really shines a light on that. And I think so, you know, the world is starting to move away from the U.S. Look at, you know, China. Even though China trade between the U.S. is down quite a bit since the tariffs, Chinese trade is up with the rest of the world. And the gains in trade, excluding the United States, have more than offset what they've lost with the United States. And I think that's a much healthier relationship for China, because you don't want to be a vendor finance. You don't want to be loaning your customer money to buy your stuff. You'd rather trade with customers that can afford to buy your stuff. And that's what China's doing now when they trade less with the United States.
All right. So honestly, that kind of brings us to a bigger question as it relates to the reserve currency, right? The status. So how realistic is it that the U.S. dollar loses the global dominance within the next decade? I mean, you know, 2, 3, 5 years? And if so, what do you think is going to replace it? And how's that going to happen?
I think that's already happening. And I think gold is going to be the replacement. And I've said this for some time, because a lot of people have had a false sense of security with respect to the dollar status, because they just didn't see any other fiat currency that could rival it. I agree that it would make no sense to abandon the dollar as, you know, the reserve and just anoint the euro or the yen. There really are no currencies that should be the reserve currency. But I think currencies need a reserve. And the flaw was having a currency backed by another fiat currency that was tantamount to no backing at all. I always thought that what makes the most sense, if the dollar is not going to be the reserve, then the world just goes back to gold. Because gold is what was the reserve prior to the dollar. And in fact, even when the dollar became the reserve currency with Bretton Woods, it only achieved that status because it was not only backed by gold, but convertible on demand into gold. And so the dollar was as good as gold. And so even though the world went on a dollar standard, they never went off the gold standard, because they were still on a gold standard through the U.S. That changed in 1971 when Nixon defaulted on our commitments to pay gold, and the dollar became just a fiat currency. Now, instead of rejecting the dollar as the reserve and just going back to gold, the world stuck with the dollar anyway. Now, the dollar got marked down quite a bit. It lost about two-thirds of its value against other fiat currencies. And, of course, it collapsed against gold. But the world kept using dollars. What I think is happening now that may be even more significant is that now the world is going off the dollar standard because they finally realized after over 50 years that it doesn't work. Because what the world is doing is giving the U.S. government a license to print money and just run massive deficits, budget deficits and trade deficits in perpetuity, which the world would then be burdened with the cost of having to finance. And I think that now, looking at the trajectory of our debt, looking at, you know, Trump and how he's vilifying the world and saying, you know, the world is ripping us off and taking advantage of us and screwing us over. Basically, it's the opposite. You know, we've been taking advantage of them. But if that's the case, if the United States doesn't want the world to lend it all this money and supply it with all these goods, then they'll stop. And I think that's a huge win for the rest of the world. I mean, I said on Liberation Day that the ones being liberated were the rest of the world, particularly emerging markets. Americans were not being liberated. They were going on a free ride on a global gravy train. That was going to come to an end. So I think it's going to be a big problem for the United States to have to, you know, live within its means, which is something we haven't done for decades, to have to produce, to consume, and to have to save, to borrow. Our economy is not built for that right now. So I think we have a major economic crisis coming as the world moves away from the dollar and goes back to a gold standard. And that's what you're seeing. That's why gold is over $4,000 an ounce. You know, it's being driven by central banks that are de-dollarizing. And this trade has got a long way to go. Meanwhile, investors are just now starting to participate. And I believe that over the next several months, several years, that participation is going to grow dramatically. And so you're just going to have a lot more upward pressure on gold and downward pressure on the dollar as people sell dollars and treasuries and other U.S. dollar-denominated bonds to buy gold.
Basically, we've been exporting our inflation around the world. So when people stop buying that, inflation is going to get really high here. You know, how's that going to change the standard of living here for Americans? Do you think it's going to rise to the point of hyperinflation? And what's that going to
look like? Well, I mean, that's a worst case scenario, but our standard of living is certainly going to go down, all else, you know, being equal, when we can't do this anymore. Yes, we create inflation and then we export it. We print a bunch of money and we send it to the rest of the world and they send us their stuff, you know, that we didn't make. And so prices aren't going up because goods are coming in. If we didn't have the trade deficit, if the Fed created all this money and gave it to Americans to spend, and all they could buy was the goods that we produce ourselves, then prices would have gone way up. But because we found this relief valve for our inflation, we export the paper, and then goods that we didn't make come in. That keeps the supply of goods higher and the supply of money lower, right? So prices stay down. But it was actually, there was a second way we were benefiting in a way, is that our trading partners that now had all these dollars that they earned selling us goods, because the dollar was the reserve currency, you know, they were willing to loan the dollars right back to us. And so they bought bonds, they bought mortgage-backed securities, they bought stocks, bought real estate. And so that pushed up our asset prices. And that's one of the ways that inflation ended up more in asset prices than in goods prices. So we saw a big stock market rally, a bond market rally, real estate prices. And so we benefited, although not all Americans benefit, right? If you already own those assets, that's a benefit. I mean, if you needed to buy those assets, that's not. If you're in the market for a house and foreigners bid up the prices, that doesn't help you, right? But if you already own a house and you're selling it, yeah. But of course, a lot of Americans feel richer when their stocks go up and when their bonds, their houses are worth more. But that was part of the beneficial dynamic where we got a low cost of living, but asset prices were going up. So we were richer on paper, but our cost of living wasn't going up. But all this is going to reverse. If the world moves away from the dollar, They don't need to run these big trade surpluses with us because they don't need our dollars and they don't need to recycle them back into our assets. So the unraveling of this is foreigners sell U.S. stocks, sell U.S. bonds, sell U.S. real estate, and sell the U.S. dollars that they get. So all of our money comes back, right? We get our cash back, mm-hmm. right? But we don't have the goods anymore.
Right.
So it's a reverse. So we get stocks coming down, real estate coming down, but the prices in the stores, the consumer goods, skyrocketing. And so that's the worst possible way where inflation, we didn't mind inflation when the stock market went up, but it's really a problem when it's the supermarket where stuff is going up. But also, you know, a lot of things, you know, used cars prices are going to soar because what is the world going to do with some of their dollars? Well, maybe they'll buy used American cars because the dollar collapses. Those cars are going to look cheap. So they'll buy them because, you know, they need them. It's like they're repossessing a lot of the cars that they sold us. Now they're taking them back. But our whole standard of living is going to go down. But the risk of hyperinflation is if politicians, the Federal Reserve and the government, if they try to combat all this with 0% interest rates or quantitative easing, then they risk destroying the currency completely and having hyperinflation. Because what we really need to do mm-hmm. when this dynamic happens is we have to let interest rates go up and we have to dramatically cut government spending, which we're going to be doing in a recession, which is not something that we typically do. We do the opposite. We try to stimulate the economy in a recession, but you can't do that when you're losing the reserve status of the dollar. The stimulus will make it worse by fueling inflation and a bigger increase in long-term interest rates. So we have to recognize that everything we've done in the past was a mistake and can't work. And we need to have dramatic cuts to government spending. We need to let interest rates go up and let the chips fall where they may, which means banks are going to fail. Creditors are going to lose money, including depositors. That has to happen. And the government has to fess up to the voters and let them know we can't give you the Social Security benefits we promised. So we got to raise the retirement age, maybe to, what, I don't know, 80 or 85. You know, you got to keep working. If you're 65, 70, we can't pay you because we just don't have the money, right? We can't borrow it anymore from China. So we're done, right? And we got to cut pensions for government workers. And a lot of programs are going to have to be substantially eliminated, or I mean, reduced or eliminated entirely. And we may even have to, and I think we should, you know, restructure the national debt and tell people who own U.S. treasuries, we promise to pay you, you know, 100 cents, but we're broke. We can't afford it. So we'll give you 50 cents. We have to figure out some kind of haircut because we obviously can't afford to repay the $38 trillion if interest rates are allowed to go up. So let's say interest rates go up and they end up at 10%. They ended up at 20% in 1980. So let's say they just get half there. And if the national debt is $40 trillion, that means we owe $4 trillion a year in interest. We obviously can't pay that. There's just no way. So either we cause massive inflation to pay it or we default. And I think default is the lesser of the evils. And I actually think that our bondholders will lose less in an honest default than hyperinflation. You know, they'll end up losing even more. Yes, they get their money back, but it doesn't buy very much.
Worthless.
Right. I'd rather get back half my money, but still be able to buy something with the half I get left. Right.
So do you think the feds know that they're trapped? You know, are they just pretending everything's fine? Because really, I mean, you just said it. There's a balancing act between rates and debt. And I think you said it earlier this year, you were predicting, you know, another round of quantitative easing. We're already starting to see that right now. They're lowering rates. How much longer do you think we can go with this balancing act before something gives?
Well, they've just stopped quantitative tightening. And so the next step is resumption of quantitative easing. And I think what's going to be the catalyst for a return to QE is going to be the failure of the rate cuts to reduce long-term interest rates or mortgage rates. In fact, it's very likely that the next couple of rate cuts will result in rate hikes on the longer end of the curve. And so I think the only way that the government will be able to reduce long-term interest rates temporarily is if the Fed steps up and buys the paper to drive the rates down. And I think that's exactly what a Trump-led Fed will do. You know, once we get rid of Powell, although even Powell might do it, but, you know, certainly whoever Trump nominates, he's going to have his marching orders. And so we're going to go back to QE, and that's going to be, I guess, a big catalyst for the gold market, the silver market. And right. Even if the bond market rallies, the treasury bond market rallies, I would expect the spreads to blow up versus non-government credit. Because if the government is creating massive inflation, and let's say it's obvious that inflation is 10%, nobody is going to loan money to anybody at 5%, 6%, 7%. So if the Federal Reserve is buying up treasuries and maintaining a yield of 4% or 3% in a 10% inflation, yes, the Fed is willing to lose 7% a year, but nobody else is willing to lose that money. So I think the demand dries up for bonds. And so in order for a corporate buyer, right, to borrow money, or a state or a municipality, right, if you're relying on a private lender, that private lender is not going to take huge losses the way the Fed would be doing. So that means that interest rates in the real economy will soar. And then there may be a lot of pressure on the Fed to start monetizing that debt. Maybe the Fed will be pressured to buy muni bonds or even corporate bonds, right, to keep those interest rates from soaring. But again, the only way the Fed can do that is by creating even more inflation, which puts even more upward pressure on the rates that it's trying to suppress, right? So the strategy can't work. And ultimately, if it's not aborted, then you have hyperinflation. But the only way to avoid hyperinflation is to take the medicine. But it's, you know, it's not going
to
taste good.
Nobody's willing to do it. Yeah. And well, but it's a short-term pain.
Right. But at some point, you get to the place where it's unavoidable. It's going to be pain either way, right? You could do the right thing and have pain. You could do the wrong thing or have pain. So at some point, the politicians may choose doing the right thing because they're screwed either way.
They really are. I mean, there's been such an irrational exuberance for investors in the market and not really understanding what's going on. But the one thing that surprised me, well, let me ask you this. Have you been surprised how the Feds have been able to extend this cycle as long as they have? I mean, they just continue to kick the can down the road year after year after year. Honestly, I'm surprised it hasn't popped a little bit sooner.
Yeah, well, you know, it has surprised me in, you know, the benefit of hindsight. I mean, if you look at the things that I was saying before the 2008 financial crisis, I did not expect us to be where we are in 2025, right? I would have expected a dollar collapse, a sovereign debt crisis to have occurred already, given the fact that we haven't done anything to fix the problems, right? The problems that I was worried about back then are much worse now. And so, yes, we have been able to get away with it. And of course, the Fed's had a lot of help to enable that to happen. But I think we've finally caught up to the can, and there's not a lot of road left to keep kicking it. And I think that's what we're seeing with the price of gold. I mean, that's why gold in the last year has, 2 years, has doubled. And year to date, gold's up 60%. I mean, this is the strongest year for gold since the 1970s. And it's not a coincidence that gold is behaving today like it did back then, because that's when the U.S. went off the gold standard. And now the world is going off the dollar standard. So these are major monetary events which are reflected in a big increase in the price of gold. And I think this is the early 1970s. This isn't the late 1970s. So this gold rally is just getting started. And, you know, gold had maybe, I don't know, 4 years, 5 years out of the 1970s where it was up 60% or more. So, I mean, we haven't seen it since then, but I think we're going to keep seeing it. If you look at the way the media has covered the gold rally, I mean, they finally noticed gold. Like after years of gold kind of rising in obscurity, it finally gets to 4,000 and like, oh, whoa, you know, and it's having such a great year. But most of the coverage has been, oh, it's a bubble, it's peaked, time to get out, right? It's a lot of skepticism about the legitimacy of this rally and dismissing any significance as far as, you know, what it means, because there is a huge warning here. Gold is not just some commodity, it's monetary. And the fact that it's doing this is a major warning sign that the Fed's got its policy wrong. That's what the market is saying. The market is rejecting the rate cuts. Even though the Fed is cutting rates, is going to cut more rates, gold is saying that's a mistake. But everybody is ignoring that mistake. But gold is obviously highlighting it. And then, of course, you got all the crypto guys that are trying to convince everybody to sell their gold and buy Bitcoin, you know, telling people this is it, it's over, get out. Because I think gold is also pricking the Bitcoin bubble. Because I think what really powered Bitcoin for a decade was the fact that gold spent more than a decade going sideways. You know, gold went from under 300 in 2000 or 1999 to 1900 in 2011. That was a huge move. And then gold pulled back and it didn't really take out the 2011 high until 2024. I mean, it did it briefly in 2020, but just immediately came right back down. But we didn't really break out convincingly above 2000 until last year. And so now gold is just continuing to rise. The consolidation is over. And against the backdrop of rising gold prices, you know, a strong uptrend, what's the case for Bitcoin? I mean, the whole point of Bitcoin was gold's not going anywhere. So buy Bitcoin because it's going up. Well, now that gold's really going up, what the hell do you need Bitcoin for? So that's why I think the Bitcoin community and crypto in general is really in panic mode right now, trying to convince everybody to sell gold. And this is all a bubble because they need people to be buying Bitcoin instead of gold. But once they stop buying Bitcoin, then the whole thing implodes because Bitcoin's never been digital gold. It's just fool's gold. It's a decentralized Ponzi, and they need more people coming in. And if they're not getting more people to come in, then the people that are already in can't get out.
So do you think there's any coexistence between real gold and digital gold, right? That everyone calls it Bitcoin and some of the other cryptos, or are they fundamentally and diametrically opposed? I mean, do you think that they can?
Well, it's not about coexisting or not. I mean, it's just that Bitcoin is not digital gold. I mean, I don't care what somebody wants to call it. That doesn't make it digital gold. Look, I can create an image of a hamburger and I can call it digital food, right? But I mean, I can't eat it instead of an actual hamburger. It's not going to fill me up. I mean, if I have a diet of digital food, I'm going to starve to death. So just calling something something because I've made it look like it in an image, you know, that doesn't change reality. So Bitcoin is not digital gold. Now, what would be digital gold, in a sense, would be actual gold that you tokenized. And of course, you didn't tokenize the gold, you tokenized the ownership of the gold so that I can own gold. And the evidence of that ownership is a token as opposed to a piece of paper that says, I owe you gold. I've got a token that's I owe you gold and my gold is stored somewhere. And then you could transact with that. Instead of, you know, the way we used to transact with paper backed by gold, now we have a token backed by gold. And it's the same thing, except it's easier to transact in. It's more fungible. You could use the blockchain if you want, but you could do that and basically digitize actual gold. But what would give the digital gold its value would be the actual gold that was backing it up, right? Mm-hmm. But Bitcoin is not digital gold. It is a token. Is it unique? Well, it's unique in the sense that it's the only one that's called Bitcoin, but there are thousands of other tokens that are very similar to Bitcoin. Some are better than Bitcoin. Some are just as good. Maybe some are worse as far as the speed with which you could transact in them, the cost, and things like that. But I don't see anything really unique about Bitcoin. I don't think it's really scarce when you have so many other cryptos that you could choose from other than Bitcoin. The fact that it's divisible, everybody says, well, that's so, you know, you could divide it. Each Bitcoin is divisible into 100 million Satoshis. Well, all that means is you don't need a whole Bitcoin. I could just buy a few hundred thousand Satoshis. In fact, there's enough Satoshis for every man, woman, and child on planet Earth to have a few hundred thousand Satoshis. It doesn't sound so scarce when you talk about everybody in the world having a few hundred thousand Satoshis, but what do you do with those Satoshis? Nothing. That's why it doesn't matter how many you have, because no matter how many you have, you can't do anything with them, right? Gold, the more gold you have, the more jewelry you can make, the more electricity you could conduct, right? I mean, gold is an actual metal. If I need gold to do something, I need a certain amount of it. Because if I don't have enough, then it won't do what I need it to do. But with Bitcoin or Satoshis, it doesn't really matter how many you have because you can't do anything with them no matter how many you got. It doesn't sound scarce. You got 2.1 quadrillion Satoshis. Bitcoin is just an arbitrary construct. A Bitcoin is a bundle of Satoshis. It's 100 million of them. If you have 100 million Satoshis, you got a Bitcoin. Why 100 million? Why not 10 million? Why not a million? If each Bitcoin was divisible into a million Satoshis, then there wouldn't be 21 million Bitcoin, right? There'd be 210 million of them. No, or 2 billion, 2.1 billion of them.
Yeah. Yep.
So they've just tried to make it seem like it's scarce, but it's not. At the end of the day, what gives gold value is not just that it's scarce. Its properties as a precious metal that are so unique and are so valuable. Bitcoin doesn't have any of that. Bitcoin doesn't have an underlying use other than trying to use it as a medium of exchange, as money. But that's fiat. That's what fiat is, right?
Absolutely.
Do you think Bitcoin's popularity is honestly delayed gold's breakout?
You know, on the margin, it's hard to say. I do think that a lot of people that might otherwise have bought gold, bought Bitcoin. But look, I mean, gold has doubled over the past couple of years, despite all these people buying Bitcoin. So would it have gone up even more? Hard to say. It's possible. Maybe it's knocked a few $100 off the gold price. Most of the buying of gold has come from central banks, so they don't care about Bitcoin. They're buying gold. And I think a lot of the smart money has been buying gold. Some of the money that bought Bitcoin never would have bought gold. I think people bought Bitcoin instead of meme stocks or some other tech stocks. I think there's a lot of spec money that went in there. But I do think that ever since the Bitcoin ETFs were launched, I think that probably cannibalized some of the demand for gold among investors in gold stocks. Because if you saw in real time, as the Bitcoin ETFs were getting all these inflows, gold ETFs and gold stock ETFs were getting all these outflows. And so I think a lot of that money was coming out of gold-related investments into Bitcoin, you know. And I do think that those trades are going to reverse. I think a lot of that money, investor money, that kind of was tired of holding gold and gold stocks and got kind of suckered in to all the hype around Bitcoin, right? I think now that they're going to look back on that trade, they're going to say, you know what? I should have stuck with my gold and my gold stocks. I'm going to get back in, right? I'm going to move my chips off of the Bitcoin and I'm going to slide them over back to gold or gold stocks. And I think that's going to be a big problem for Bitcoin. You know, I think it's going to be more of a problem for Bitcoin than a benefit from gold, because I think that as a lot of investors try to move their chips over to gold, they're going to find out that those chips are gone because there needs to be a buyer. And I just don't think there'll be enough new buying coming into Bitcoin to allow all that money to get out. So I think what's going to happen is it's just going to be a big collapse in the price of Bitcoin. And that's going to end up being a huge loss for a lot of the people that moved out of gold into Bitcoin, and they won't be able to pull much money out to go the other way, right? So they're going to end up losing a lot of their gold and a lot of their gold stocks because they went into Bitcoin. And of course, those losses equal the gains of the people who were smart enough to get rid of their Bitcoin. That's all it is. There's no wealth that gets created from Bitcoin or crypto. All that happens is wealth gets shuffled around. So the people that sell the crypto make money based on other people being dumb enough to buy it. That's all that's going on. It's a zero-sum game, or it's actually a negative-sum game, because when you count in all the money that's sucked out by the miners and all the rest of the infrastructure and Wall Street and all their fees, right? So everybody loses. Everybody's raking the pot.
So what do you think is going to have to happen, you know, going forward to get gold to reprice dramatically? I mean, we've seen a huge uptick, but I think it's going to go higher. I think you believe it is too, but do you think that there's going to have to be a dramatic event or a series of tipping points that's going to continue to cause this rise in gold?
Well, again, it's already happening. I just think that what's happening continues and it ultimately accelerates. Mm-hmm. I think the big catalyst, I think, to really cause gold to rise faster, you know, than it is now would be a big drop in the dollar against other fiat currencies. So we see the dollar index rolling over. I think that'll be a negative. I think when the Fed goes back to QE, that'll be a big positive for gold, big negative for the dollar. If we start to see more weak U.S. economic data, of course, we're not seeing the data at all now. I guess the government is shut down, and so we're not getting the data. But I think if we were getting the data, it would be weak. And I think that at some point, the markets will accept or acknowledge that we're in recession, that we have higher unemployment, and then the Fed will begin actively trying to stimulate a weak economy with rising unemployment. The stimulus, again, will backfire as a sedative. The economy will get worse, but what will get stronger will be inflation. And so, again, that will be another driver for gold. And then, of course, if you see a lot of weakness in the bond market, which, again, results in the Fed having to buy those bonds and printing money to pay for them.
Right.
And that is another big catalyst for the gold price.
So where do you see gold going? It's north of four, hit, you know, new highs. I see going high, well over five. Yeah. I see possibly hitting 10. Where do you see it in the future?
Yeah, it's going to keep on rising. You know, this is a big long-term move. You know, if you want to compare it to the Dow Jones, which is, you know, easy way to look at it. Mm-hmm. In 1999, you needed 45 ounces of gold to buy the Dow Jones. That was the record high in terms of gold in 1999. Today, you could buy the Dow with 11 ounces of gold. So that's a 75% decline in the price of the Dow measured in real money over 26 years. Not only do I not see that trend changing, I see that trend accelerating. So I think that by the time gold peaks, you know, you'll probably be able to buy the entire Dow for less than 2 ounces of gold.
Wow.
And so that's still about a 90% decline, 80, 90% from where we are right now. But where would that put gold? Well, that depends on where the Dow is, right? Because if the Dow goes down to 20,000, which would be less than half of its current price, 46,000, gold can go to 20,000, or actually that would be 1-to-1. Gold can go to 10,000. So if gold were 10,000 and the Dow were 20,000, you'd be at 2-to-1 right there.
Right.
You know, but the Dow can go to 50,000 and gold can go to 25,000. And now you got the same relationship. But if people think, well, that's crazy, the Dow would never get as cheap as 1 ounce of gold. Well, you could buy the Dow for 1 ounce of gold in 1980. But in 1966, you needed 20 ounces of gold, you know, 19 or something like that, or 20 to buy it. So, you know, we've had a precedent for that kind of decline. And in fact, I think the Dow was at 19 ounces of gold in 1929 at the peak, and it went down to 1 ounce of gold in 1932. So, you know, when we've had dramatic lows in the stock market based on major economic problems, the Dow has gotten that cheap. I mean, I think if you could buy the Dow for less than 2 ounces of gold, you should do it. I mean, I think it's probably going to be a good buy. But that's the long way down from where it is right now.
Yeah,
but
unfortunately.
Plus,
yes.
A lot of it, too, depends on what else is happening. I mean, if the U.S. has completely gone socialist, who knows what kind of policies might be in place in an environment where you could buy the Dow for 2 ounces of gold. I mean, maybe it won't be cheap. I don't know.
It's a whole new world. But
assuming we're still a somewhat capitalist country with a rule of law, right, then you'd probably want to buy it. But who knows, you know?
That is definitely a great perspective to put it into real dollars, putting it against the Dow. So I got to ask this because I love gold and silver. All right. So how about silver? What are your thoughts on silver?
Yeah, well, look, silver, I think, finally broke out of a decades-long double top.
Mm-hmm.
You know, silver topped out at 50 in 1980 when the Hunt brothers tried to corner the market. Now, of course, silver started out at a dollar, basically. So it went up from a dollar to $50. And then it sold all the way off. You know, I was buying silver for my clients back in the late 1990s under $5. You know, it was in the fours. I remember when it got to five.
I do too.
And then it got all the way up to 50 in 2011 for like a nanosecond. And then it sold back down into the teens. And it's taken a long time, but we just got up to like 54 and change last week.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're, you know, 52, 53. But I think we've taken out 50. And I believe that's now the support for silver. And I was saying for many years that when we eventually got through 50, it would go from being the resistance to the support. That's natural for markets. And so I think 50 is really the new 30, because I think once we broke above 30 last year, I thought that that was it. 30 was the support, because it had been resistance. And now I think 50 is support, just like I think probably 4,000 is now the new 3,000 on gold. I think, you know, gold's around 4,200, 4,300 right now. But I think 4,000 is kind of the support now for gold. I don't think it's going much lower than 4,000. I mean, it might go a little lower, but I won't stay there. And it may never go back down there. I don't know. We might be at 5,000 before we hit 4,000. I don't know. But I think it's going up there. And I think silver, we're still at about 80-1 right now, gold-silver ratio. The low, the cheapest silver got was just over 100-1, which was insanely cheap. So we're not that cheap anymore, because silver's up over 80% this year, whereas gold's up, you know, 60%.
Right.
But historically, if you could buy 80 ounces of silver with 1 ounce of gold, you're getting some really cheap silver. So I think both metals have a long way to go. That's why I continue to encourage my clients to keep buying.
Absolutely.
You know, my company, Shift Gold, is, you know, where I think you'll get the best prices, and you won't get sold into some scam, rare coin, phony numismatic stuff. You just want to buy bullion, and we'll get you a good deal and ship it out quickly so you can take possession of your gold and your silver.
Well, personal experience, I agree. Looking ahead 10 years, if your predictions kind of hold true and play out, weaker dollar, bubbles bursting, gold, precious metals continuing to rise, what does it look like for everyday Americans? What should they be doing now to just kind of prepare going forward?
It's not going to look good, just like it didn't look good in the 70s. You know, people saw pretty big decrease in their standard of living and their purchasing power. A lot of people who were retiring had to delay those plans because their retirement savings could no longer provide the goods and services that they believed they were going to provide, the increase in prices due to inflation. You know, a lot of women ended up having to go get jobs because their husband's paychecks were so destroyed by taxes and inflation that he couldn't afford to pay the bills. So the wife had to go get a job, help make ends meet. So yeah, people's lives changed a lot as a result of the inflation of the 70s, which again was caused by the government. It wasn't like something that just happened exogenously. The government did this to us, and the government's doing it to us again. And they have been for some time. So I do think that the American life is going to change. We're just not going to be buying as much stuff, consuming as much. And therefore, a lot of the employment that is ancillary to that consumption is going to go away. So, you know, and the government's, you know, going to be printing a lot more money to deal with all the unemployment. And so, you know, that's going to be throwing gasoline on the fire. You know, you've got the prospect of AI out there that could be a productivity booster. And so at some point, maybe we'll be able to get the benefits of that. But right now, we're just getting all the burden of having to make the investments, which we can't afford right now anyway. We're so broke. So I think it's going to be tough. I think what Americans could do now is they could get rid of their dollars and buy silver and buy gold and stock up on things. I've been telling people for years, don't leave money in the bank to do your grocery shopping in the future. Do that shopping now. Some things you can't store, but there are certain things that are not perishable or have a long shelf life. Stock up on those things. And there are certain things that have very long shelf lives, like just products that you might use, like bathroom products, you know, toothpaste, mouthwash, razor blades, shaving cream, soap, right? I mean, you're going to need that stuff. It's just going to get a lot more expensive. Let's say the price of shaving cream is going to go up by 10, 20%, 30% a year. I mean, if you buy it now instead of a year from now, that's a 20% return on your investment. Most people do better buying these goods than investing in a stock market.
In the stock market.
Because, and you know you're going to need these goods. But the other thing, the real risk too, is not just that the price goes up, mm-hmm. but that you can't even buy it. Because I'm afraid that sometime in the next few years, that if inflation gets as bad as I think it can get, there will be price controls. Even though they don't work, there will be a lot of political pressure on the government to do something about rising prices. And so what will they do? Well, they're not going to do what's really going to help, which is stop printing money, right? So what they're going to try to do is stop the prices from going up. And that's the only way they can do that is by stop the availability of the goods. So the government could say, okay, shaving cream is, you know, $20 a can, and that's how much you can't charge anymore. Okay, well, maybe there's no shaving cream that you could buy then. So the price is $20, but you can't buy it. So what difference does it make what the price is? But then if you go to the black market, then you could buy it, but it's $40, right? Because that's the real price. But the government is trying to impose a fake price so they can pretend that the price is 20. Well, it's fine. The price is 20 as long as you don't buy it. But if you actually want to get it, then you have to go get it illegally, and then the price is 40. But the other problem, too, with having to buy it on the black market is the guy that's selling it to you, he's not going to take Visa or American Express. You know, and he may not even want
He's not going to take the U.S. dollar either, maybe.
Right. So, and the reason he won't take a credit card is because he's breaking the law. He's a criminal. He can't sell you the shaving cream at $40 when the law says that the price is 20. So, you know, you're going to have to give him something of value that the government can't trace so he doesn't risk going to jail. And that might be, you know, your silver coins. That's one of the reasons to stock up on silver. I mean, first you can stock up on the shaving cream and the razor blades, but then if you run out, you could buy it with your silver.
Oh, Peter, always fascinating. I love hearing your take on things. And honestly, whether people agree or disagree, honestly, your consistency kind of keeps everyone honest. So I really do appreciate it. I really do. And thank you for joining us on The Retirement Trainer. I appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and keep up the good work. And, you know, if your audience wants to retire, they or stay retired, if they're already retired, they need to act quickly before their money retires. That's going to be a big problem for a lot of people getting wiped out to inflation. So not only will gold and silver help you, but we've got strategies at Euro Pacific Asset Management. We manage portfolios of dividend-paying foreign stocks that I think are ideal for retirees and soon-to-be retirees, because they will provide an income stream that I think will outpace domestic inflation. And so you'll be able to maintain a standard of living if your income goes up more than the U.S. cost of living, which I think can happen if you have the right portfolio of non-U.S. dividend-paying companies that are generating their earnings outside the United States, particularly in a lot of the emerging markets, because these consumers are going to gain the purchasing power that Americans lose. And so while we have an economic bust, the world can still have an economic boom now that it's been liberated from the burden of having to prop up the U.S. economy. And it has been a big, costly burden on the world to enable all of our excess consumption and our excess debt. And when the world doesn't have to finance that anymore, when they don't have to supply that, that means they have more resources for themselves, more products, more savings, more capital investment. Mm-hmm. And so I think their economies can do better. And so investments that are tied to those improvements, Americans can still make that money. Even if you're an American, you don't have to go down with the ship financially if you've got investments abroad. So people should look into that. You can talk to our reps at Euro Pacific Asset Management at europac.com is the website. And don't forget to listen to my podcast, The Peter Schiff Show. I do at least one a week, sometimes two at my YouTube channel too, Peter Schiff Show or Peter Schiff on YouTube, and follow me on X. You know, I'm constantly composing posts on X. And so if you want to know what my thoughts are real time, I do all that myself. I don't have anybody that does it for me. So when you're reading my posts, you're reading my words.
Well, and don't forget about Schiff Gold, because
I mentioned Schiff Gold to buy.
I know, but I wanted to make sure that we close with that too, because that's really important.
Yeah, go. In fact, as soon as you're finished watching this, go right to Schiff Gold. That's your next stop, and get yourself some gold and silver before the prices go even higher.
Yes, absolutely, Peter. Again, thank you very much. I look forward to having you back.
All right, take care.
All right, take care.
Tested your fitness level, not your workout routine. I'm talking about your financial endurance, because if saving to a 401k is the extent of your effort, it is time for you to start shaping up. And Ed Sedell is here to help you do that with The Retirement Trainer. It's his podcast to help you examine your financial stamina and learn the questions you should be asking and areas to focus on to help you get to that place you've been working so hard for, a happy, comfortable retirement. And it's not as hard as some might have made you believe. Ed's broken it down into five simple steps. It's the Retirement Fitness Plan, which he personally created to help clarify key areas of your financial life. Learn more about the Retirement Fitness Plan at EGSIfinancial.com. Then subscribe, follow, and listen to The Retirement Trainer on Apple Podcasts, your iHeart app, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. Investment advisory services offered through EGSI Investment Management, DBA EGSI Financial Group, a registered investment advisor. Insurance and annuities offered through EGSI Financial Services, Inc., Ohio License Number 102-0619.